This program is brought to you by Haymarket Books as part of the Socialism 2024 program. You can hear more recordings from the conference by subscribing to the Socialism Conference podcast feed. Many video recordings are also available at socialismconference.org. If you enjoy these recordings, you should join us at Socialism 2025, which will be held in Chicago next summer, July 3rd through the 6th, 2025. If you are ready to put ideas into action and get organized with others from across the country and the world, make a plan with your organization and your friends to come to the Socialism Conference.
Well, thanks for coming. My name is Mike Leyba. I'm one of the two co-executive directors of City Life Vida Urbana. And I'm here with an amazing crew of folks. And we're here, you know, this session was called The Grandmothers of Housing Justice. This year, we celebrated our 50th anniversary as an organization. Yeah, it's not a small deal that, you know, this left housing justice community organizing group turns 50 and is growing and exciting and stronger now than ever. And so that's a really beautiful thing, and it's a huge asset for us on the left, right? So before I turn it over to folks to just introduce themselves quickly, I wanted to share our vision statement, just because I think it's really an important way that we talk about our values. We at City Life Vida Urbana embrace a vision of a society and a world where there is peace among nations and people, respect for our cultural, racial, and sexual diversity, cooperation rather than competition, no extremes of wealth or poverty, respect for nature and the condition of the environment for ourselves and for future generations, production that serves the needs of the many rather than the greed of the few, as well as a guarantee that each person has the right to food, housing, healthcare, education, meaningful employment, and the right to exist in freedom without fear of displacement or deportation. We understand that these changes will not happen spontaneously. We hope to be part of a city, state, national, and international movement that believes in a similar vision and is prepared to build organizations and leadership that it will take to create this new world. So it's really our honor to be here at the Socialism Conference, presenting and sharing our experience with you and hopefully learning from you too. And I just want to extend a message of thanks to you who are building organizations and leadership that's required for us to usher this new world in. So just want to appreciate you. So with that, I'm just going to turn it over to our panel, our esteemed panel, to introduce themselves, starting with Zafito, if you could say your name and maybe your role and when you got involved in City Life.
Thank you. Thank you, Mike. Hi, everybody. Welcome. My name is Zafiro Patiño. I'm originally from Argentina, and I got involved in City Life Vida Urbana in 1999 because I was facing my second eviction in the city of Boston. Was this a group of artists that we lived in a loft, and we were in the risk of losing our homes. And City Life came organized, and we were able actually to purchase those for affordable housing, those apartments. Two years and a half ago, I was invited to be one of the organizers for City Life in the area of Boston. Jamaica Plain is a neighborhood of Jamaica Plain in Boston. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. My name is Frances Amador, and I'm a community organizer as well for City Life Vida Urbana in the north side, which means the Latin area of Boston. I got involved with City Life in 2018 because I received a notice to quit. And someone told me, one of my cousins told me, yeah, you can receive some help and go look for your rights at City Life Vida Urbana in one of the meetings. And I organized my building and went look for help. And since then, I've been fighting eviction with the same landlord. So, I'm great to be here today.
Thanks, Frances. Kim?
Hello, my name is Kimberly Landaverde. I'm 21 years old. I'm born in Boston, but both my parents are from El Salvador. And I got involved with City Life the end of my junior year of high school through a fellowship that my high school offered. I wanted to find a way to get connected to movement work in East Boston in my neighborhood, and especially having grown up in a neighborhood that was being heavily gentrified, I wanted to find a way to help my community stay and remain in their homes. So I was involved, and that first weekend I received an eviction notice. So that's just to show you that anyone is vulnerable, right, to greed and to capitalism and its effects. So I'm happy to be here.
Hello, everyone. Steve Meacham from City Life. I'm an organizer at City Life for 24 years now and been an organizer for 52 years. So I've been around the block a few times on this. So I'm happy to be here also. Thank you for being.
Okay. Hello. My name is Eric Wellers. I got involved with City Life, I think, about 3 years ago. For some context, I just finished law school. I'm a new lawyer. And the reason I was looking to get involved with City Life is a combination of when I came into, like, after the COVID moment, I was really ready to reject the status quo, but was looking for a community to build something better with. And I was having bad whiplash at law school in such a corporate place. And I've just been really excited to find a way to kind of bring together that law with actual, you know, community good. So excited to be here.
Yeah, and you know, up on stage, it's worth mentioning we have folks who are board members, who are staff, who are volunteers, and kind of part of partner organizations, like Eric was mentioning. But to start us off, I was hoping that Kim, you would share with us what is Boston like? What's like the context that we organize in? I mean, 50 years doesn't come from nowhere, and we're in a pretty particular place. So just share a little bit about what's going on.
Need more mics. Okay. Yes, so I'll share a little bit about sort of our organizing conditions right now in Boston, so spare with me for little percentages. So in Boston currently, 65% are renters, right? So that means the majority of our residents are renting, and nearly half of all renter households are families. 80% of renter households cannot afford new construction rents. Massachusetts, as you may all know, has made headlines for being one of the most expensive states in the country. 52% of renters in Boston are rent burdened, the majority being single parents and BIPOC renters. These household incomes are also the lowest in the city. Not only can they not afford current rents, but rent increases and rent gouging, right, is causing additional housing instability. We don't have just cause evictions. We have a current statewide ban on rent control. So for a little history, in 1970, the state legislature gave cities the authority to enact rent control. Three cities had it, right? Boston, Brookline, and Cambridge, correct? And in 1994, rent control was defeated in a statewide ballot question campaign in a very close vote. Rent control was banned statewide, even though only three cities had it, which goes to show that power is really centered in the state. And as a report from the Boston Globe showed, I think about a year and a half ago, a majority of the Commonwealth legislators are homeowners, right? A study showed that 21% of all buildings purchased in the greater Boston area are by an investor or an LLC. And private equity is buying whole portfolios of property. So there's an ongoing financialization of landlordship, which means that the most impacted are folks in our working class communities and are facing these unstable and unaffordable housing situations and are constantly facing the risk of getting priced out or facing no-fault evictions should the landlord try to evict for a number of reasons, like wanting more money or wanting to sell or just simply because they feel like it. And this doesn't include the fact that folks that we're working with are also living in outdated outdated buildings and facing lots of bad conditions. Additionally, there's been a privatization of affordable housing in the Commonwealth, and the definition of affordability is really skewed by the city and state metrics.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Can you just say a little bit about what is City Life fighting for, and what are we fighting against?
Sure. So I guess for that, what I'll do is I'll read our mission statement and ground us in our mission statement, which is a practice that we do at all of our weekly meetings. So City Life Vida Urbana is a grassroots community organization committed to fighting for racial, social, and economic justice and gender equality by building working class power to affect systemic change and transform society. So, as we mentioned, we are fighting to build a working class movement by using housing as our vehicle, even though the word housing isn't directly mentioned in our mission statement. At our weekly meetings, like I said, in English and in Spanish, we go over our mission statement to really ground ourselves in a future where the working class is empowered, has dignified housing as a human right, and where we are in charge, right? As we know, el pueblo salva al pueblo. The people save the people. And so we know evictions and displacement is violence, and it impacts everyone, families as a whole. Like I mentioned in my introduction, personally, growing up in East Boston, I saw many of my friends and my family members move away from the neighborhood, be priced out of their homes. Like I said, my first week, I received an eviction notice. It was my junior year of high school. And it goes to show that housing is something that connects all of us, right? Housing is the need that we have. And so we are really committed at City Life to fighting for this transformed society, right, where the working class doesn't have to worry about housing, right, that they have that stability and are able to continue to empower themselves and fight for other changes. Is housing justice is racial justice, and housing justice is economic justice, etc. So, yeah.
Thanks, Kim.
Yeah.
Yeah. Snaps. Francis, I'm hoping we can go to you next. By way of sharing your story, how do folks generally get connected to City Life?
Y esta vez yo voy a hablar en español para hacer un poquito de justicia del lenguaje. Y en forma de contar un poco mi historia, ¿verdad? Como dije, mi nombre es Francis Amador y ahora soy una organizadora comunitaria, pero antes de ser una organizadora comunitaria, ¿verdad? Soy parte y miembro de la ciudad de East Boston, donde estamos viendo que nuestra ciudad está siendo gentrificada por corporaciones grandes. Y yo recibí una noticia de desalojo en el 2018, donde busqué ayuda por medio de una prima y me dijo, ve a las reuniones semanales de City Life Vida Urbana y busca tu ayuda, conoce tus derechos, ¿verdad? Y lo que hice fue organizar todo el edificio y fui con todo mi edificio a la primera reunión con City Life Vida Urbana. Y ahí encontramos lo que necesitábamos, ¿verdad? El apoyo moral, el apoyo de conocer nuestros derechos, el apoyo de saber cómo organizar, el apoyo de hablar con un abogado, porque a veces creemos de que si no tenemos un abogado no vamos a poder luchar una guerra. Y eso es, ¿verdad? Un mito. Porque sí podemos luchar contra un propietario sin necesidad de tener un abogado, ¿verdad? Al saber nuestros derechos, a saber ejercerlos y cómo defendernos en corte. Y esa es la forma donde, ¿verdad? Vamos, por eso vamos a las reuniones de City Life Vida Urbana. Yo tengo 27 años de vivir en East Boston. 27 años de vivir en el único lugar que puedo decir que conozco como casa, que es el mismo lugar donde estoy peleando ya hace 6 años con el mismo propietario, donde el propietario es un corporador, ¿verdad? Él es un desarrollador al mismo tiempo, donde está hace 6 años tratando de desalojarnos y hasta el son de hoy, voy a tocar madera, no ha podido. Hemos intentado muchas formas para poder llegar a un acuerdo, ¿verdad? Hemos logrado contratos pequeños, aunque sea de un año. Hemos estado negociando contratos donde él siempre nos pone siempre un pero ahí, una trampa para que nosotros, ¿verdad? De,
nos desmayemos, pero nosotros seguimos luchando. Y la forma por que luchamos y seguimos luchando es porque creemos que la justicia de vivienda y que tener un techo es un derecho, ¿verdad? Y es la única comunidad que mis vecinos y nosotros conocemos como comunidad. East Boston es reconocido como una ciudad de inmigrantes, ¿verdad? Y ahora nuestra gente, nuestra clase trabajadora no puede vivir en East Boston. Está siendo desalojada, excluida por los precios inmobiliarios, ¿verdad? Que están siendo tan elevados, donde nuestra comunidad no puede trabajar, no puede pagar. Una comunidad donde nosotros creamos East Boston, nosotros construimos East Boston, todo lo bonito que tiene East Boston, los parques, luchamos por parques muy bonitos, luchamos porque todo sea mejor, por un vecindario más sano, por un vecindario más fuerte, donde nosotros ya no podemos, ¿verdad?, favorecernos de lo que por lo que nosotros luchamos, porque estamos siendo desplazados. Así que en forma de cómo nosotros mismos, ¿verdad?, cómo llegamos a las reuniones de City Life es escuchando la voz e invitando a nuestros compañeros y así unas luchas largas, no solo yo como Francis llevo 6 años luchando, pero también tenemos miembros activos que tienen 16 años luchando en sus apartamentos y ganando contratos de 5, de 3, de 6 años con el mismo corporador, con el mismo dueño, ¿verdad? Son luchas grandes que a veces te desgastan, pero son luchas que valen la pena, ¿verdad? Y es ahí donde no perdemos la confianza y la esperanza en saber de que si tú lo lograste, nosotros también lo vamos a lograr. Y como puedo decir de que no hay peor lucha que la que no se lucha, porque es mejor luchar y saber que luchaste aunque perdiste y no haber luchado sin saber que pudiste haber ganado.
Thank you, Francis. All right, I'm going to do a quick pop quiz. Keep you on your toes. Who here knows, raise your hand if you know what a tenant union is. All right, that's about everybody. Love it. Who knows what a tenant association is? Yeah, you can keep your hand up. It's the same thing, basically. we organize buildings and tenant associations. Francis mentioned our meetings and the role that plays. Zafiro, I'm hoping that you can share what are some of the ways that we work with members who come in facing displacement? What are some of the initial steps or the initial ways that we work with folks?
One of the first things that we do, we invite the people to our meetings. We have 2 meetings weekly, one in English and the other in Spanish, that we are gathered around 130 people every week in our meetings. They became recently meetings hybrid, so we do it on Zoom and in person. These meetings are very important because these meetings have a different segments. Where one of the segments I want to light up is testimonies. So people come and they offer their testimonies, their words, their stories, and that's how the people relate to each other. Then they realize that their cases are not their only ones, that this is a happening to everyone, and that create a safety space, a safety where shame goes out of outside the door. People originally, when they come first, they come afraid. They come very fragile. They are very damaged physically, mental, and emotionally. So disturbed. Eviction is a very violent act. So people get very affected. So the way that we run these meetings are very, we have trainings inside the meetings, notice to quit training, we have consultations with lawyers, we have a political conversation, and then we we escalate how we, you know, we see somebody that is a natural leader, so we start proposing different escalation in tactics as well, like, you know, okay, you're building, we write a public letter that we send to our officials, electors in the district. We look support on that realm, but if we don't have that, we escalate in order to go to in front of our buildings. We do vigils, we do rallies, we go to even to the properties or to the business of the real estate people. So we call media that call a lot of attention. So basically, you know, we see how progressively our members become leaders, and leadership development is very important in different trainings. I think it's something that we are going to be talking a little bit more.
Yeah, that's going to be most of our what we talk about today is leadership development and how we approach it. Eric over there, looking sharp in the blazer, by the way. It looks like a blazer. in your words, what is City Life strategy, and what's your role within it?
Okay. Yeah. So City Life refers to our strategy as the sword, the shield, and the offer. The sword being people power, public protest, defiant celebration like parades, things that really let the people and like the impacted people assert that they're like more than victims of capitalism. They have a power to bring and fight for their own better outcomes. The shield is legal defense, and that's kind of where I fit in. It's eviction defense in court, usually places where the landlord class has a strategic advantage. And the goal of the legal defense can be, I mean, usually just to get more time in the apartment, or really to get more time for the impacted people to develop and like start that, like bring the sword, and using them together, the sword and the shield goes into the offer, which is a collective bargaining agreement when, you know, at the start, the landlord is starting with what they assume is a power advantage. The offer is really a demand for a better outcome that can range anywhere from, once again, it can range from just more time, but it can also include, it has included in the past, like long-term lease agreements for long-term stability and possession, like the landlord being forced to sell and possession ending up with the tenants or a community land trust to really take that property out of the speculative capitalist market.
Yeah, so thanks. So the offer can take a lot of different forms, like we're a tenant association, a tenant union, unions collectively bargain, right? And we don't have rent control in Boston, but a lot of the collective bargaining agreements that we win through our organizing actually would be similar to what if we had rent control in Boston. And so now actually, as we're kind of fighting this political fight around rent control and saying we need this and we need it now, we need it yesterday, we also can say, and some landlords are actually doing it, not of their own free will necessarily, but like, it's not like we're asking for, you know, something crazy. Like, this is something that makes, it makes a lot of sense for everybody involved here. And that actually kind of speaks a little bit to like how we see ourselves as organizers and as an organization within this kind of broader ecosystem. Like, it's not just us that's organizing. We work really in partnership with as many kinds of organizations and groups as makes sense. So Steve, I'm kind of wondering if you could speak to a little bit about like, what is our role in the ecosystem? And how is it maybe distinct or different than other kind of organizations?
I guess I would start by, can everybody hear this? Let me pull it up here. I start by just noting that for all of us who do anti-eviction or anti-displacement organizing, that this is a radicalizing movement. I mean, it's very, if you don't want to challenge the capitalist market logic, you can't organize against a rent increase. So, you know, the very process of people deciding to fight for their home is a process that leads them organically, you might say, to a socialist position, to a critique of capitalist market. That is especially true in a place like Boston, where the market is very, very hot. And that leads to another question that I think is related to what Mike is asking, that we look a lot at something called cultural hegemony. And that's the idea that there's stuff in the air, there's ideas in the air that aren't challenged, aren't defended, but they undermine us. They take away our rights, like the fair rent is the market rent, or the owner can do whatever they want with their building because he owns it. If you don't challenge those and smash them, then you can't organize. So that becomes part of everything we do in terms of our rallies and everything else, is to consciously look at those ideas, pull them out of the air, and smash them. Other groups do this kind of thing too, but for City Life, it's really, I mean, of course, that's true for sure with all of you, but City Life is emphasizes it more than most groups in Boston area. We do a lot of political training, that there are courses that challenge the system. Not only do these things come up, you know, meeting after meeting, but we have things like called the Displacement Defenders, 100 Cadre Training, Anti-Oppression. These are a series of short courses. And the people who take those short courses are people that are coming out of our struggle. And we've heard, you know, we've kind of understand from our experience that when people come out of their struggle and stay involved with that, with us, a lot of times it's because they've had one of these courses. So that might be a good place to stop, just to mention the Peter Marcuse quote that we use a lot, which is that the housing crisis doesn't exist because the system's not working. The housing crisis exists because that's the way the system works. So maybe I'll pass it for that moment.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Eric, I'm wondering, I mean, given how you play kind of a unique role as an attorney who works in partnership with organizers, can you just share a little bit about maybe how you think about institutional relationship building, or maybe how you see your role?
So I'm going to start my answer with a quote from Lilla Watson about...
You love quotes.
You love quotes. And I think this one captures the spirit of City Life working with other institutions. If you have come here to help me, you are wasting your time. If you have come because your liberation is bound up in mine, then let us work together. And in my experience, so when I came in as both a law student and have worked with some of the partner organizations, the real... Like, yes... Partnership is about capacity building, but it's also like relational as opposed to transactional. It's about finding ways, like what's appealed to me is that, yes, I can participate as a lawyer. I can make that work for movement, but I can participate as a full human being. And it's also really important to know when the lawyering gets in the way of the organizing solutions. Like not every problem needs that legal solution. So with the institutions that we most commonly partner with, I'll speak quickly to we have these Sword and Shield meetings twice a month that brings together City Life and other grassroots groups around Massachusetts with legal service providers like Greater Boston Legal Services, Harvard's Legal Access Bureau, which is a student-run legal resource provider. Legal Aid Bureau. I heard it. With those groups, like, yes, the meetings are first about, you know, what are the current crises, the current questions, where do resources need to go, and with City Life and the grassroots, where are impacted people saying the resources need to go? And that's, like, you know, priority one, but the other great part of these meetings is the bonding, is, like, people coming to find that they can belong in this space. Like, yes, to contribute and build capacity, but again, as full people.
Great. Yeah, and we definitely want to, just going to do a little foreshadowing. In a few minutes, we're going to break into some small groups, and we definitely want to learn your perspective on what does it mean to be a member-led organization or movement. That's one of the questions that I'm hoping we'll have some time to discuss. But before we do, Zafiro, I'm hoping you can share a little bit more. Who are our members, and how do you approach leadership development in your role as an organizer?
Yeah, very good question. And I think leadership development is essential in our work. Some of the fights can take years. I am involved with several buildings, organizing tenant association, that they are fighting for 2.5-3 years. So it's a period where how you maintain those leaders and how you keep them in the movement, and after that period, what do you do? How you keep them involved? So one of the things is through those trainings that Steve was mentioning, but also in our BTA and our Boston Tenant meetings that we do weekly, in one of the segments that we have is the political conversations. The political discussions are based, like, for example, on the Black Month, Black History Month. We kind of bring that issue into how interact with our fight. Like in May, the struggle and the history of May here in Chicago. Not many people know that what happened here and all the struggle that start here in Chicago and how that connect to our struggles. And also connecting with Latin America struggles. We have a lot of Hispanic communities with us that they are suffering displacement. And their struggles, like I'm from Argentina, so I talk about the Madres de Plaza de Mayo and the struggle then, the dictatorship, Honduras, Berta Cáceres. So we link all those issues in our struggle and to bring consciousness, because we are lacking from a history perspective. And we don't refer to those as our sustain, how we can sustain and we can strategize today's struggles based on those, on the history of the people, the working class struggles around the world. So I think that through that is like working with a critical mind, like developing that critical mind. Many of our members, many of them, even people from Latin America, they will be talking about against Maduro, against Castro. But then when we are talking about rents and that you were 35 years paying your rent and that you pay the mortgage and that who at the end is the owner of those buildings and who is who in the power scale, then everything is kind of like start making sense. And that's the development that we see in people. We see people that they come with that fragility and moving from the back of the room closer to the front, and soon they are going to be in front of the room talking and articulating and thinking that this and comparing. And so then that's what we are want to, you know, we want to see and that development and because it's building a movement and the interaction also with other struggles, like the union struggle, like the in Boston, the teachers. We were with the teachers marching with them. So also, when we see our leaders or the members in their own building, bring them to another struggle in another community. So then they start seeing the whole picture. This is not just in a little scale, so it's a bigger scale, and then we go deeper and deeper, and we have members that they are for decades in our own organization, and that is beautiful to see, and that's how we can actually, as an organizers, are inspire us to continue and to keep going.
Great, thanks. Last question for the panel. Francis, as from your perspective as an organizer, how does this leadership development, how does it impact or affect our ability to win our tenant association or our displacement fights?
Like Safira mentioned, right, the power of our BTA meetings, right, our political discussion. Also, we do popular discussion, right? We not only talk about political, but we also talk about popular discussion. We also do a lot of core support by having members and organizers go to court with other members, people who's facing eviction by themselves, and sometimes they have no one to have the, like, they don't have no lawyer. And we empower them by our meetings, and we empower them to be with them, and they feel very comfortable to fight in front of the judge with a landlord lawyer, right? Because of our popular education. We go to court, we write everything down, we learn from court, we train our members, we train our leaders, we form TAs by testimony as well, by other hearing testimony from others. That's how we empower people. People find their voice by raising their voice, talking to our rally, talking in front of our meetings. Like Zafiro said, they're little by little, they're going into the front, and all of a sudden they're leading the political discussion or the public or the popular education that we're doing. We're doing Escuelita, which is a question that regardless of what is a notice to quit? What's the difference between a notice to quit for 14 days and a notice to quit for 30 days? Also, we work around with other community organizations like Mutual Aid and other many others organizations around us that also ask us for trainings for their own members and trainings for them in order for them to help them and more support and guide them either to our meetings or guide them to the process that their members are going through. We empower them. We make strategies we push them to the end. Like you see them sometimes, they go crying into our meetings, and there's a lot of support from other members, support from organizers. You feel that family support right there as a community, right? So it's really the power of the community, the power of the people is really there when we decide to make an strategy and when we decide that we're fighting for something that everyone is going through, right? Like housing. Housing is something that I think everyone at some point will face a housing displacement at this time, because either you cannot are going to be able to afford the rent, or either you're not going to be finding a place to move as soon as they want you to move.
All right. One last question, actually, for Steve, which is, can you just say a little bit about, like, what are some of the victories that we actually have gotten, or maybe even some of the challenges that we're working up against?
Yeah, maybe starting with the challenges first.
Yeah.
Just to acknowledge, by the way, that I think all of you know that tenant organizing is hard. And it's not just hard because of landlord power, which is certainly true. But it's also hard because of all the assumptions people carry with them through life that we haven't been trained in collective action, any of us. One of the things that we should mention is that, you know, our traditional area of organizing is in private market buildings that we're trying to organize against rent increases or evictions, and we try to get those buildings out of the market, like Eric said, get them into social ownership. But there's actually a lot of types of housing, a lot of big developments that don't fit that mold. You know, HUD multifamily housing, for instance, where affordability is threatened with loss because the landlord is opting out of Section 8 contracts, or even public housing in some cases. There's a lot of organizing that we're involved in that doesn't fit the standard model of private market housing getting rent increases. And we've discovered in the last year or two that it's really important that we not take for granted past victories and the creation of social housing. And so we're now involved in organizing in some nonprofit-owned buildings where the contradictions are pretty sharp, even in some cooperatives in Boston, where the board has just fallen apart and is acting in extremely undemocratic ways. And most important, the experience of the tenants in those buildings is that this is just any other landlord. And that's a devastatingly bad outcome for us. We want that experience to be the right way to go forward is through social ownership. So all that becomes a very, very rich combination of possible tenant organizing. And, you know, we've won a lot of the battles to get buildings out of the market, but we're still fighting, I think, sharply these ones of existing social housing. Thank you.
Yeah. Join me for a quick little round of applause for our amazing panel. Thank you all.
Thanks for listening. If you liked this episode, subscribe to our podcast and to the Haymarket Books YouTube channel, where events like this one are hosted live And don't forget to check out haymarketbooks.org.